Hey, cashiers. We Have the Receipts podcast is coming at you live from Netflix is a Joke Fest in Los Angeles.
Chris, are you kidding?
No, Netflix is a joke, Courtney, but this is not one of them. Our listeners in LA have the chance to join us for a live recording of our podcast, We Have the Receipts, hosted by me, Chris Burns.
And me, Courtney Revolution.
Join us and a few surprise guests from your favorite Netflix reality shows on Saturday, May 4th at 1 p.m. at a secret location in Hollywood.
To be announced.
Get your tickets for the We Have the Receipts live show at tudum.com/WHTR. That's Tudum, TUDUM.com/WHTR.
Tickets are limited. If you can't make it to the show, we still want to hear your beautiful voice. Leave us a message at speakpipe.com/WeHaveTheReceipts.
You may even hear your own voice on the show.
Grab a ticket at tudum.com/WHTR.
And we'll see you on May 4th in Los Angeles. Bye, cashiers.
I think there's a kind of a myth sometimes with actors that they're extroverted. I was a really shy boy, and the acting really helped me to sort of overcome that.
You're listening to Skip Intro with me, Krista Smith. While growing up in Ireland, Andrew Scott started taking acting classes to bring him out of his shell. Little did he know he would develop a deep passion for the art form. After kicking off his career in Dublin and London's theater scenes, he made his on-screen debut in the 1995 film Korea. Over the next two decades, Andrew worked steadily in theater, film, and television, capturing the attention of American audiences with his villainous performance as Moriarty in Sherlock, the BBC series starring Benedict Cumberbatch. But it was his role as the priest in the second season of Phoebe Waller-Bridge's award-winning Fleabag that broke the internet and catapulted him into the American zeitgeist as the hot priest. Last year, he gave an absolute heart-wrenching performance opposite Paul Mescal in the film All of Us Strangers. Andrew's latest performance in the limited series Ripley takes a darker turn. Based on the best-selling novels by Patricia Highsmith, it's a visual feast and an emotionally enthralling story of deceit, fraud, and ultimately murder, all set against the backdrop of 1960s Italy.
It's such a delight to meet you, Andrew Scott. Also, it's been so fun to see you a little bit here in LA for Golden Globes and the Spirit Awards. You are definitely the most popular person in the room.
And not don't say that.
It's true. And not just because you're wearing a colorful suit. And I love your style. And I will say your style today is a great fit, as my kids would say. I love the
it's
fit.
It's a fit. It's love a fit, isn't it?
It's just wonderful to see how American audiences have embraced you. And I remember seeing you, first clocking you with Moriarty on Sherlock.
Right.
Right. Loved that series. Came a little late to it.
Right.
But when we discovered it as a family, my sons, we would watch it. We loved it. It was so good. And you were such a good foil for Sherlock, yeah. Benedict. All those scenes were great. And then obviously Spectre, 007, huge,
yes.
Right? But it feels like the Fleabag suddenly made you like a bona fide American movie star.
We can go that far.
I will. The okay. Hot priest. It's like hot priest. It just became a thing.
Yes.
And it was so interesting to learn that it wasn't written that way. It was just written as priest.
Just priest.
But the internet did that for us.
Yeah, the internet absolutely did that. Yeah, it would be really weird if you were reading, I got a script and it said hot priest. You'd be like, you'd think this is slightly dodgy morals here, if that's what you're required to be, you know. You wouldn't. I mean, if you were required to be a hot nun, people would be a bit like,
yeah, but it's so,
but of course then that's the thing, and it's just a bit of fun. People still, particularly being in LA, people just shout hot priest at you all the time.
Yeah.
When you're crossing the street, it's extraordinary. You're like, what am I supposed to do with that? Just like,
just
or
smile.
It'll pass.
Yeah.
It'll pass.
It'll pass. Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, Phoebe Waller-Bridge is just brilliant. That
genius.
Series was brilliant.
Genioso, yeah.
That's so great.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we're here to talk about Ripley, which is gorgeous and cinematic, and it just washes over you, and the details are incredible. It's my favorite kind of viewing experience where I'm rooting for the sociopath at the same time I'm terrified of him.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I think Steve Zaillian has just done a great job in sort of replicating what Patricia Highsmith herself did, which is to make you root for somebody who's doing these terrible things. Mm-hmm. And so the big challenge for me was to make the audience feel like what it's like to be Tom Ripley rather than to be a victim of Tom Ripley. And that's quite an unusual thing to surf, if you know what I'm saying, because I'm required to sort of really love him in the same, protect him in the way you do with all your characters, with all my characters in them. But it's difficult with Tom because I feel like even in beginning talking about the character, I feel like I have to sort of protect his secrets, mm-hmm. you know, a little bit, because we talk so much about backstory of characters mm-hmm. and I feel like his backstory is quite unreliable. Mm-hmm. And so you don't want to over-explain him too much. And I suppose there are things that I feel protective that I made decisions about, but I kept them to myself.
Yeah. Well, I will say Tom Ripley, it's a famous fictional character, yes. Patricia Highsmith. There's four novels. Mm. There's been two films.
Yes.
One by Alain Delon, who played it in the 1960, and then again by Matt Damon in 1999, and now by Andrew Scott yes. in 2024.
Yeah.
And what's so delicious about this particular version is it feels so authentic to the book.
Yeah.
And it also gets to play out over 8 episodes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you really follow this story and yeah. you're hanging by one cat
that
paw,
cat.
One paw print. And I'll, you know, listeners, yeah. you'll see it and know exactly what I'm talking about. But you're just hanging by a thread, even though not that much is happening in every single episode. It's interesting to hear you talk about how you don't want to give away the secrets, but the camera's on your face the entire...
Yeah, for 8 hours.
For 8 hours. I mean, every little thing. Yeah. It's like, how was that to internalize all of that isolation? And it's very much you're on screen alone for a lot of it. You're vibrating because the audience, as you watch it, are feeling it, but you're not working off of anybody, and it's all internal.
It was challenging. I'm not going to shy away from saying that it was challenging, because he's a loner character, and how you are able to convey what he's feeling without a lot of talking sometimes, and a lot of deep relationships. You know, a lot of our television, I think, can be based around a family or a police department or a hospital or even a couple. So I think it's quite rare for a limited series like this to focus so much on one character. And as an actor, it's quite an unusual thing to do. And we shot it during the pandemic. And so I suppose isolation in a way was in a lot of people's minds. And we shot it. I was away from home when we shot it. And so, it was challenging to be with somebody who's quite opaque as a character, you know. In a way, to spend so much time with him and just so much screen time. But having said that, I really love the character. There's something about the character that I really love. And, you know, of course, I have to forget about the reputation that the character has and sort of protect him in a way. And I think what's really gripping about the show is that there's an extraordinary amount of logic to it. Mm-hmm. He's not a natural-born killer, I would say. He's other things. So we see the logic of what he has to do in order to survive. And each episode leads us in a very particular way. And I think that's what's gripping for the audience. And we really spend time with the character when he's doing these things and how much of an expert he isn't. Mm. And sometimes what he's really talented at is being able to think really, really quickly. And I think that's very wonderful for an audience to watch. I think we love watching brilliance or talent in our characters.
You watch the big event, obviously, of him going, being hired to go overseas and find this, you know, ne'er-do-well billionaire's son and bring him back to reality.
Yeah.
That sets in motion this incredible transformation, but it's slow. And you see it seeping in, and someone that never had the opportunity and someone that has all the opportunity and doesn't care. And how does that jealousy manifest into transformation, into making these decisions? And realizing, like, it's impossible to go back to the other Tom.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's wonderful that we get to spend a little bit more time seeing Tom in his own natural habitat than we perhaps have in previous incarnations of the story. And I think that's really interesting that we see. It should be said that the series is so beautiful. I mean, it's just incredibly beautifully designed. One of the reasons that I love the character, he's got this huge appreciation for art and Italy and food and culture and nature and, you know, these incredible sets that we were on. They really are magnificent. And I think that's something that the other characters take for granted. And just seeing his appreciation for life, actually, and the arts, and that he learns about that because he's never been exposed to that kind of beauty before.
Learns Italian, such a quick study.
He sure did.
Yeah.
And so did I.
I was just going to say, how's your Italian now?
My Italian is. That's okay. Sto provando. It was a real challenge. I loved it. I had a really wonderful teacher, and There's a lot of Italian in it. I have to speak a lot of Italian in it.
And they really, Italy is a character, obviously, just as important as Tom and Dickie and Marge. Italy is just as important a character. Yeah. And you talk about the production, it's exquisite. Yes. And it is black and white, which is something that is so unexpected.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, why do this in black and white? You're in Italy, but once you watch it, you're like, oh my God, you know exactly why it's in black and white.
Yeah.
I felt that it was very clear why the director chose to do it in black and white. And also the clothes I heard were not color also. Like you're wearing period clothes because it's in the early 60s and that you were kind of not wearing color to shoot.
It was all pretty muted. My memory of shooting it is it's so extraordinary because it's obviously not muted because I don't see in black and white. It's beautiful and it was something that Steve was very passionate about from the very beginning and it looks insanely beautiful.
Yeah,
I mean,
so
I don't
gorgeous.
Think I've ever seen any television that looks as beautiful as this.
We have two co-stars to talk about, but before we talk about Johnny and Dakota, I want to talk about all of your other co-stars that don't have any lines because they are just as important.
Yeah.
The ashtray.
Oh my God.
The fountain pen. The typewriter. The cat we mentioned.
Yeah.
The robe. I've never experienced a series or a piece of content that inanimate objects elicited an emotional response for me. When you see his hand grace that ashtray, you're like, stomach goes, or the boat, all of that stuff.
It's so true because he's a loner figure. He has this great, almost like sensual relationship with things. He loves them and you feel like he protects them. And of course, they're representative of things that can be representative of Dickie, some of the things he steals.
The ring. Oh my God, the ring.
The ring is incredibly important.
Yeah.
Because the camera is trained on these things so much, I suppose we as an audience are invited to just really appreciate them. And then other characters, you know, I remember saying to Steve very early on, the characters of the hotel clerks, because he checks into all these hotels. And that's really how you find out a little bit about him. How he operates in the world outside of talking to Marge and Dickie, the other kind of central characters. We get to know him and how he can flirt with people to get what he wants or use his charm. And then you have this, like this, you know, what I always say is that this great character of the cat.
Mm-hmm.
And without giving too much away, this cat has just this, it's just a great role. I remember thinking that's a really good part for an up-and-coming cat.
Yeah, the cat is definitely steals the show in one app. I think episode 5, it's just, it's all about the cat. It's unbelievable. And it's terrifying. You're like, no!
Totally.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Did you feel the need to read the books or...
This is genuinely not just PR speak. The scripts were so extraordinary. I remember reading them for the first time on an airplane. Is how I read them, I don't know, for whatever reason, on a long haul flight. And I thought, well, I'll read a couple of these. And I ended up reading the entire thing because it was so beautifully and so sort of economically written, but so witty. It's witty. The show is witty and it's got such incredible atmosphere. So my job ultimately is to interpret the scripts as a piece of televisual art. And so I have it a lot of times when doing famous things, famous characters. And I remember when I was playing Hamlet and even Moriarty in the Arthur Conan Doyle. It's to be respectful of the source material, but not too reverent.
Mm-hmm.
Because our job is to make something new and not to make, you know, so to get the flavor of something. And the flavor of it was so beautifully concocted in Steve's scripts that I didn't focus too much on it. I didn't need to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also not my priority. And I find that sometimes it's good for the actor to know nearly as much as the audience knows. And so not to have too much information. For me, this is what works. Not to have too much information that the audience doesn't have, because then you think you're transmitting something that perhaps actually isn't there. So you just use the scripts very much as my Bible.
Mm. Well, I would love to talk about Johnny Flynn and Dakota Fanning, who play Richard Greenleaf and Marge Sherwood, right?
Yeah.
Because it is, like we said earlier, the audience is with you solo. And then when the other characters come in, it's just palpable.
Yeah, yes.
Because it is very dark and macabre. And a couple times when Marge is suspicious about everything. And what was it like in between the takes? Was there brevity between all of you?
Oh, of course.
Or did you have to hold that tension?
Yeah, well, Johnny is... there's a sort of love between those two characters that I think we were kind of reluctant to define too much about what that is, about whether it's romantic love or whether it's just whether he wants to just occupy his space.
She's saying that because she's jealous.
Jealous? Of you?
Yeah, of me. She had you all to herself before I showed up. Now we do things without her. But even that's not the real problem.
What's the real problem, Tom?
She loves you more than you love her. When you walk together, who takes whose hand?
Maybe it is true, but it doesn't mean I don't care about her. I care about her very much.
I understand.
We're very good friends. You try not to hurt your friends.
Of course. Vicky.
What?
I'd rather leave than break up a friendship. Do you want me to leave? I'll leave in the morning if you want. I'll leave now if you want.
Let's just let it go.
So much of the challenge for me is to not drown Tom in too many things, because what's so fascinating about him is that he's slippery, that you think, oh, that's what he is. And then you think, oh, no, hold on a second, that isn't what he... So that you sort of... there's important that there's a sort of neutrality or something between them. And Johnny is an absolutely gorgeous, warm person. Those scenes are just... to me, they're sort of love scenes in a way, because I think if you don't have love at the heart of it, we don't fully understand why Tom does what he does and why he's so enamored by Dickie. And then Dakota and I, she's just suspicious of Tom. And so there was incredible chemistry. And actually, ultimately, you spend more time with Marge and Tom than you do with Tom and Dickie, actually, as the story goes.
Are you staying with him in Rome?
For a while, I guess. Help him get settled.
But you don't know where he's staying.
He said he'd leave me a message at American Express there once he knows where he's staying. And that's where you should write him, if you write him.
Then what?
Then, I want to go to Paris.
You or you and him?
Just me.
What about Christmas?
What about it?
Well, did he say whether he was planning on coming back here if he's not going to Cortina?
He didn't say, but I don't think so.
Well, why do you think that if he didn't say?
This is kind of awkward, Marge, because he said some things about you.
About me? To you?
Yeah.
Like?
He said he's feeling like he wants to be alone for a while.
Except he's not going to be alone. You'll be there, apparently.
We just had really good chemistry, myself and Dakota, and we just really enjoyed the scenes, because we have to do so much without saying anything.
Yes.
We have to sort of say, I cannot bear you, but do it with a smile. But ultimately, I kind of think Tom kind of does like Marge as a character, even though she's...
I think he respects her.
Yes, he respects her.
And he kind of honors the challenge.
Yeah.
And in the end, I felt like Marge is just very complicated.
Yes.
And not as altruistic as
absolutely
we would think
not.
That
absolutely.
She would
no.
just be the girl.
Absolutely not.
You
no.
know, yeah. as she's introduced at the beginning, the father of Richard yeah. says, my son, I don't know if it's his girlfriend or his friend or whatever, but she's an interesting one.
Exactly. There's something which is so genius in Patricia Highsmith's writing, which is that they're not sort of morally upstanding people either, and they're entitled people, and they have an idea of their own artistic merit, which I think is so funny in the thing, which, you know, they think they're artists and writers, and Tom, this guy who's completely overlooked, has more talent in his little finger, but they don't see that, and he's able to pick up language really quickly, and he's able to learn how to paint, and he's able to correct Marge's terrible writing, and I think it's a very interesting sort of study on class, actually, and who gets invited to the party and who doesn't. Mm-hmm.
The scene when he's at Caravaggio, he's in the museum just absorbing, when Ripley's going through, just absorbing, it's like giving him energy and thought, and it's almost giving him permission
absolutely
to do what he's going to go do, and that brilliance of like putting the coin in to get the lights, which is, oh my God.
Those places are so beautiful.
Oh, so beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful and so beautifully interwoven into the story about how Caravaggio actually ultimately helps him survive, ultimately because he uses light in a way to help him escape some places without giving too much away.
Yes, we have to talk about the action in this series.
Yes.
Because there's one scene in particular in the boat out in the water that is a full-blown action sequence.
Yes.
I mean, this performance is very physical.
Yes.
Even though it may feel tiny, but the way he walks, the way he moves, how he changes his posture depending on who he's with these different cons and however he navigates through the world, he's constantly shape-shifting.
Yeah.
But in the way that scene is shot, with that, there's so much physicality to it.
Oh my God. Absolutely there was. It was exhausting. I'm still exhausted from it.
I was just going to ask, how is it to film that, first of all, underwater? And I mean, that couldn't have been
easy.
Easy.
No, it wasn't. It was really fun up to a point. But yeah, it was really, really demanding. Very demanding. It takes a lot of core strength, a lot of leg strength, and human bodies are heavy and and so are boats.
Yeah.
And so is water. And you know, Tom has a fear of water as well.
Yeah.
There's so much action in that particular thing. But I love the fact that it's not just sort of, this is how you would go about getting rid of a body.
Mm-hmm.
You have to really think about things. And I think what's fascinating in this episode is that you just see his mind at work and then you see things not going right, which of course happens. And I think a lot of the times in our drama, we see people doing things and they get it right almost immediately. And in this, you don't necessarily see that a lot.
Under duress and things going out.
It's really gripping, I think.
I was like, oh, we're getting some action here. Andrew's got his action star now.
Love that.
It's coming on. It's coming on.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
You're a journeyman actor, right? Mm. You were one of those kids that was like shy, maybe do a drama class, maybe that would work for you.
Yes, exactly.
And it really did.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you go to college to study drama, and then you immediately drop out. And you're Irish, and you look about 20 years younger than you are, right? So you have this baby face. So what was that like for you in those early days?
I think there's a kind of a myth sometimes with actors that they're extroverted. I was a really shy boy, and the acting really helped me to sort of overcome that. And I used to act a little bit as a kid, not much, but just like commercials and little theatre things and stuff. And then when I was about 18, I went to the Abbey Theatre in Dublin, which was an incredible learning ground. That's why I dropped out of college to go and actually do the thing rather than study the thing. So I spent a few years at the National Theatre in Dublin, really as a young, really young person. It was extraordinary when I think about it, playing these amazing parts in the Abbey in Dublin, very famous theatre. And then I moved to London when I was 22. And I think there was just probably just more opportunity. I was auditioning a lot. And so I've been over and back to London since then. Yeah, it's, as you say, it's a journey. It's a big, big journey. And I've always been just fascinated, and my big inspiration has always just been good writing. And because when you start, obviously Ireland is a very literary place, and there's so much literary history there. So I just don't believe you can make a great film or a great TV series or a great play if you don't have a great script. So that's where I've always gone. And so that means doing things that maybe don't hike up your profile, or I'm always happy to play supporting parts if the writing is good. So it's never been for me about trying to play leading roles necessarily. But in the past few years, that's just what's happened. And I don't feel like there could be a bigger part on television than Tom Ripley, because he's just there the whole time. And it's interesting because in a book, you can follow somebody in the first person very easily, but it does require a huge amount of stamina, mental and physical stamina. Mm-hmm.
Focus.
And focus. And I was very lucky because I had all the episodes. Because sometimes what's difficult is that you get the first... I know actors have talked where they've had the first three episodes and they can't map out where you're going to be in episode 7. You go, well, should I play this note gently in episode 3 and then really... So it's great to have the entire score, so to speak, and then you can choose where to reveal and where to display and where to conceal. So that was really the challenge of it, is to go, okay, well, that's there and that's there. Just there was just an awful lot of internal work, as well as just the hours and the, you know, long time that it took to film it. But it's such a great privilege to get to play this character.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking 8 episodes. That's like 8 movies, basically.
Yeah, it's 8 movies.
It?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, and when you're in every scene, acting is very enjoyable, but it's to act so much that's a really big challenge. It's a really big challenge, because some days you feel like you need to restore to have the energy to do that, and you don't have the opportunity to do that. So that was really probably the biggest challenge of it, because a lot of the time, if you're an actor and you're in a show that's about a family, you would maybe not be filming on the Thursday or the Friday, and you'd have time to go over your... So with this, there was never opportunity. And of course, you have to learn all the lines. A lot of them were in Italian.
And yeah. You have a voice.
You're doing a voice.
I would imagine that all the theater you've done has given you that stamina, though,
as
a performer, kind of.
Yeah, it's definitely helped.
Be able to do that. I was very disappointed that I didn't get to see you in Vanya, where you're playing all the characters, and that to me is just incredible. And I love that you've had this full, very, very full theater career.
Yes, absolutely.
And us in America, we haven't had a chance to see you as that.
Well,
but now you're our movie star. I watched Billy cross a room and run after you and everyone, you know.
Yeah, glorious Billy. You know what? You can see Vanya, actually, they do these beautiful things now where they called NT Live, where they film very expertly, not like your dad with a camcorder when you're at school. Really beautifully filmed theatre now. And so it's actually on in cinemas around the world in a thing called NT Live, Vanya. And it's actually doing phenomenally well. It's number 6 in the UK film box office at the moment. Is that insane?
That's insane.
It's really, really
insane.
See
what I mean? You're like, it's all going 360. I mean, was there ever a time when you were auditioning for things where you're like, I'm never going to make a living at this?
No, I've always been lucky in the sense that I've never... I had to have another job. I've always earned my money, maybe not very much money in the theatre. I've always worked, I say, touching wood. And that doesn't mean working, you know, 364 days of the year. You have to take some time out to, again, as I say, sort of refuel. But I didn't ever feel like I was not succeeding when I wasn't well known. When I was touring around in the theatre, I was thrilled. Mm-hmm. I've been lucky that I've been able to do theatre and film most years. So I've always worked in both those things. But there's just something, I suppose, in the past, I suppose if you stick around long enough, people go, we'll give him a go.
Is there any experience that you had early on from a film that you were in, or watching a film, or watching a play, or in a play, that informed who you are now?
When I was 17, I made my first film, which is a really tiny Irish film called Korea. And there was an actor in it who was also, to use that beautiful expression, a journeyman actor, I suppose you describe him. He was called Donald Donnelly. He had a huge amount of theatre credits and film and television credits, but not like a particularly famous actor. But what he was a very kind actor. And you learn on a set when you're 17, it was my first film role, by looking at him and what way he talks to the crew and what way he talks to the other actors, how to behave. And that's something that I'm just always so grateful for, because had I been exposed to someone who was snappy with the crew or rude or just in some ways uncollaborative, that's what I would have absorbed and think, oh, well, it's okay to behave like that. That's what you do, right? And so I think it's very important that when people are on the set, that there's a kind of collegiateness and a kindness in some ways, because sometimes I think people's beautiful work exists despite their bad behavior, not because of it. And I sometimes think artists can behave in a way that isn't collegiate and ungenerous. And I think we have to work to create an atmosphere where the process is enjoyable as well as the product. So he was very influential, and I was very grateful to him, because it sort of sets you up for the rest of your life. Not necessarily artistically, although he was an incredible artist, but just as a human being on set, because filmmaking and theater making is so collaborative. You can't do it on your own. So it's really important that people feel that they enjoy being at work, for me.
Yeah, and it can also be very tedious.
It can be really tedious. It can be
really boring
and waiting and tough.
Yeah.
You know, you work for 12 to 14 hours a day. It's a lot. It's really a lot. So, yeah, it's important. That's what you're spending your life doing.
I love hearing that, because I do feel like a lot of times we make excuses for artistic behavior or allowances for this kind of stuff. But it's lovely to hear that something that landed on you at 17 is something that you've taken with you.
Well, I think a friend of mine said a great thing, which is, of course, you're going to have creative differences on set. You're going to be like, or questions at least, and that you might argue, but you should argue as allies, not as enemies. I think that's really important. Mm. Okay, we disagree, but we're all trying to do the same thing, and that you, I don't know, that's remembered.
Is there any genre that you want to tackle next? We did a beautiful black and white character study, right? Apes.
Yeah.
That mug, that Irish mug on screen.
That Irish mug. You ain't getting away from that.
Okay, so what's next? All of Us Strangers, I should mention.
Thank
beautiful
you so much.
Film
thank,
last
thank
year.
You, thank you. I want to do something funny, and I want to be in a musical.
Nice. Any particular comedy or musical, or are they both? Could we do
it? We could do both. We could do both. I don't know. I'm not particularly good at casting myself in things and going, oh, maybe I could play that character. I've done it a few times, but yeah, I think comedy is incredibly underrated, and laughing is one of my favorite things to do. And so I think it's underrated, and I think romantic comedy, in a sense, I think there's a slight resurgence of it at the moment.
I'm feeling it too. A little rom-com, I'm feeling it.
I'd love to be in a really well-written rom-com. I'm putting that out there and sort of hoping that manifests in some way.
So it could be a rom-com musical, could just be a rom-com, could be a separate musical.
I'd love to be in a rom-com musical. I had to sing for the first time in Vanya on stage in a very small way, but I really, really loved it. It's extraordinary to sing, isn't it?
I wish I could.
Well, me too.
My kids will even stop me if I'm singing to the radio. I mean, I don't think I'm tone deaf, but maybe I'm like one, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can
one
learn
thing above.
That. It's just, I think it's about confidence, yeah. And it's about really listening. And it's fascinating learning about singing. It's something I want to learn a bit more about, because my confidence in my singing is low.
Right, well, I'm surprised Tom would be a singer. He would have learned to sing.
He would have been brilliant at it.
Oh, that scene when they're in the jazz club.
Oh, God.
Okay, so Italy, it's COVID, right? So it's the pandemic. Mm. You're alone. You're shooting in all of these incredible places with no one in them.
Exactly. We shot, it was so beautiful. I really remember we shot in Venice in January during the pandemic. Probably 2021. That period of time is so strange. And usually they have the Biennale there around that time. And that wasn't on, and COVID was on. And so I was walking through to get to the set from my place where I was staying through the San Marco Square. And it was in the morning at whatever, 6:30 or 7 in the morning. And it was the Venice fog. I was like, this is so extraordinary. Because this would usually be, even at this time, around this time of year, really, it's one of the biggest, most beautiful tourist spots in the world. And it was completely, completely empty. And I was like, I'm just walking through here. And I have these sort of extraordinary photographs at that time. And so it was really, really unique, actually. And sometimes quite sad in some ways. But that lent itself, definitely, when I think about it, it lent a real feeling to... probably to me and to the character, because I did feel isolated. I definitely felt isolated because of the restrictions that you had. People couldn't come and visit because they had to isolate for 5 days before they could see anyone. And so I didn't want to. I was very aware of not getting it because...
Well, also the crew is behind masks and
exactly,
shields.
So even
that camaraderie you would have, the kind of communication with DP or grip, you know, all
that's
the people
it.
That it takes to make a movie,
it's kind of silent.
You can't even see the expression.
You can't see the expression. And of course, it's a different language a lot of the time. And so it was a very unusual time. And I suppose in some ways I have to give myself credit for that, for being able to keep focus on it. But you have to deal with what you have, not what you wish you have. And so for that reason, I think it probably in some ways felt infiltrated into the isolation of Tom, because that's absolutely what he felt. And so you find your joy. So even because you're not allowed into places, literally we couldn't go to many restaurants. So when we would go to these places, these beautiful museums or whatever, and they were open to us, when a lot of other museums weren't open, it was actually like, oh, wow, I get to be a sort of tourist as Tom, or I get to eat some of the beautiful food in these beautiful restaurants. And it was really extraordinary. And we went to so many different places. We went to Capri. We were in Palermo. We were on the Amalfi Coast. And we shot in a place called Atrani, which is the tiniest village.
Well, I was going to say, in addition to the ashtray and the fountain pen and the cat... Stairs are also another character in this series. Incredible.
Oh my God.
The incredible use of stairs. Beautiful shots. Just so cinematic. Mm. So film noir, which I love.
Yes.
I love
it's
film noir.
It's very film noir. It's really beautiful. And there's a kind of... I don't know what you would call it. As you say, it's sort of like transfixing. There's a sort of melody to having to... Because when your experience of being in Italy is, particularly on the coast, you know, you're walking up these incredibly steep stairs. And I love the fact that Tom is just sort of... He's experiencing life for the first time in a completely different way.
And so confident as he's experiencing. It's interesting.
Yeah, exactly. And his confidence grows really, really quickly. He's just able to... He's streetwise. That's what he is. He's streetwise. Oh. And so you see the dark underbelly of him, you know. That
good with numbers.
He's good with numbers. Good with words, too.
Yeah, good with words.
He's talented.
Good with numbers.
Mr. Ripley.
Did you get to keep anything? Did you keep a memory of it at all?
I have the ashtray.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Winner. I was like, please tell me you kept that ashtray.
I have the ashtray.
It's incredible. Yeah,
it's absolutely beautiful. One of the first things that Steve, when we first met about the project, he showed me the ashtray. So it's great that I have it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm great. I'm glad that I responded to it in the way I did because it is a character.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
It's just
there's
silent,
so many things. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't recall experiencing anything else like that when you're picking through and you're mapping it out by when that thing is going to appear again.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's great.
Absolutely. And all the things that his relationship with the ring, he's a very sensual character. And I'm glad that you feel that he's a physical character because I thought about his physicality so much and how, well, of course, he has to sort of morph into different people or not necessarily into them exactly, but like just to get an essence of them. And so his love and respect for things and beauty and clothes and everything, really. I think that's why we love him. I think that's why we go, oh, wow, there's something kind of vulnerable about him, I think. And so it's really strange because I haven't come across many people who have seen it, you know, as we speak. So I'll be very interested to see what people, if people, you know, I know people will be frightened of him.
Well, that's the point, but that's we're also drawn to him, and that's the beauty of those characters,
exactly.
Which is why there's been two movies, which is why there's been four books, which is why people keep coming back to this character because he's
so
timeless.
Yeah.
And you know, you think about that era in the 60s and you're like, okay, no cell phones, no this, like how could he get away with that? But just as many cons are happening right now today, you hear about it all the time. It's just like these people are amongst us all the time.
Absolutely. And that's why I really really hesitant to talk too much about his backstory, because backstory is something that is gives us as audiences or as human beings power. So if you're frightened of somebody who's coming down the street, the reason you're frightened of them is because you don't know anything, because you don't know anything about them. If you saw somebody who's in your family, you go, I'm not frightened of that person because you know everything about them. But if you don't know where you are and you don't know who they are and you don't know what their second name is, the person has the power. So I don't want to take away his power too much by pouring a sort of theme over him, or even people talk a lot about his sexuality, like what's going on with him, is he asexual, what's his vibe. And I feel like we live in an age where identity and labels are a big question, and so far I'm kind of reluctant in some ways to move away from his sort of fluidity in a way.
Oh, it's a fantastic character.
Thank you so much.
I will say congratulations. I love talking to you.
Thank you so much. I could continue to talk to you for a long time,
but I know I can't. Italian, are you still keeping it up?
I'm trying.
Okay, how many languages? You speak all the Romance languages now?
I speak a little French, a little Irish Gaelic, and... Now a little bit of Italian.
Can I get some Irish Gaelic? Have I ever heard?
Gurv míle maith, which means thank you very much for having me today. Gurv míle maith. And what else did I say? Can I rion bóthar lát, which means may the road rise up to meet you.
Oh,
isn't that beautiful?
That's so lovely.
I love that. Can I rion bóthar lát.
Oh, that's a perfect way to close out the podcast.
Yeah.
I love it. All right. I can't wait to see you again the next time I see you. And
when we're talking about the musical?
When we're talking about the musical, and I expect a beautiful wardrobe and fit as well.
Absolutely.
Love the colors.
I'll always try.
Yeah, our rom-com musical. I'm putting it out there. You know, I have powers of my own, right?
Good. Glad to hear. I can start talking
about it. I'll manifest it.
Great.
Of itself.
Love it.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you so much.
Ripley is streaming now on Netflix.
Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Krista Smith, your host and creator of the show. Skip Intro is produced and edited by Isabel Arricchio and engineered by Dave Corwin. Special thanks to our coordinator, Alyssa Hillman. Please subscribe, rate, and review Skip Intro wherever you've been listening. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Krista Smith. If you enjoy the podcast, please go to netflixqe.com for more. That's netflixqueue.com.